Radio Prague News.
The Education Minister Josef Dobesh has extended accreditation at the Plzeň Law School until 2016. Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg has told the Austrian daily Der Standard he still believes the Czech Republic will eventually sign the European Union's fiscal treaty. More than half of the country's town halls and bureaus have unfurled Tibetan flags a day ahead of the International Day of Solidarity with the People of Tibet. Education Minister Josef Dobesh has reacted to pressure by students at the Plzeň Law Faculty and extended the undergraduate program at the troubled school until 2016. Speaking at a press conference on Friday, he stressed it would be impossible for all 1,800 undergraduate students at the institution to complete their studies elsewhere. The school had been slated to close this year following a decision by the Czech Accreditation Commission over staffing problems at the school and a lack of vision. The faculty has been dogged by problems since 2009 when it was hit by a scandal involving plagiarism and fast-track degrees. The education minister's decision brought immediate reaction from Accreditation Commission head Vladimira Dvořáková, who called it unlawful and confirmed in response the commission will file a legal complaint. Technically, the minister was not in a position to counter the earlier decision. Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg has told the Austrian daily Der Standard he still believes the Czech Republic will eventually sign the European Union's new fiscal treaty. In the interview published on Friday, the minister, who is also chairman of the Topo 9 party and a presidential hopeful, reiterated his conviction the country belonged in the EU core and also expressed support for energy reforms. Regarding the Czech Republic, he rejected the idea of a referendum on the adoption of the single European currency. He added, however, that his opinion differed from the Prime Minister's. Prime Minister Petr Nečas and the Foreign Minister have clashed on a number of occasions over the fiscal compact. More than half of the country's town halls, city halls and regional bureaus have unfurled or will hang the Tibetan flag. And this a day ahead of the International Day of Solidarity with the People of Tibet, which was annexed by China in 1959. Andrea Pavlatova, coordinator from the NGO Lungta, told the Czech news agency that of 728 bureaus or town halls contacted, 405 have agreed to take part in the Flags for Tibet event, while 307 declined. Taking part in the event has become a tradition in parts of the Czech Republic since Žižkov City Hall in Prague became the first Czech institution to join the international event 17 years ago. The country's criminal police are searching for a dangerous recidivist, Milan Žiga, who may have infected several people with hepatitis C, gonorrhea, and syphilis. The man, a drug user, could face up to 3 years in prison for spreading the diseases. The suspect was arrested at the end of February on the suspicion of having raped another man and admitted under police questioning that he had had unprotected sex with at least five other people, although he knew he was ill with the serious infectious diseases. The 27-year-old has a long history of crime and received 6 jail sentences in the past for crimes that included theft and robbery. I'm Jan Vellinger. That's all the news for now.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, we'll bring you details of the closely watched corruption trial against the informal leader of the junior coalition party, Public Affairs. This being Friday, we'll offer you a roundup of the business news, and later on in the arts, we'll report on a new film by film director Bohdan Slama called Four Sons. And, of course, we'll end the program with a Czech lesson as usual, so do please stay with us. The first round of the trial of leading public affairs member and former transport minister Vít Bárta comes to a close on Friday. Over the course of the week, no less than 6 past and present government ministers have taken the stand to give testimony in the biggest corruption case in recent memory, which will be adjourned on Friday while the court goes over the evidence. Christian Falvey has been following the trial and joins me now in the studio. So, Christian, can you give us a rundown of the week's events?
The week began with testimony from the main actors in the affair. Public affairs member Kristina Koci repeated her allegation that she was given 500,000 crowns by Vít Bárta in an envelope in an upscale restaurant last March, and that she was told to be more loyal and not to work against him. She said that their personal relations at that time were highly strained, and that her loyalty to the party had suffered from Mr. Barta's undemocratic practices. Importantly, she also testified that all of the in-party referendums that the so-called Direct Democracy Party had held had been rigged. Other party members have testified that she later admitted to them that she had received money as a loan, but would be able to present it in the media as a bribe. Then Yaroslav Škarka, who was also being tried for taking a bribe from Mr. Barta, repeated that he had long received extra money from him for loyalty, and later received 170,000 crowns, which the prosecutor accuses him of reporting only out of fear of the media. Mr. Škarka claimed in court to have a recording of the visit with Mr. Barta during which he was given the money, but said that the part of the recording when the actual handover took place was badly damaged because of anti-recording jammers in Mr. Barta's office. Surprisingly, this revelation brought out a real surge of emotion from Mr. Barta, who said he felt betrayed. Just about all of the high-profile members of public affairs have come to Mr. Barta's defense. Key members denied ever having given Mr. Škarka money, while others testified that Škarka was frequently in need of money and often borrowed from others. The party's chairman, Radek Jón, who was forced out of his position as interior minister, repeated this and painted Vít Bárta as someone generous enough to loan money to anyone, saying that 500,000 crowns for him was like 500 crowns for a normal person. Many of the ranking public affairs members also testified that Krisztina Kocsi was acting in concert with leading figures in the Civic Democratic Party in order to split the party.
It's certainly been a week of mudslinging in the courtroom, and we've seen a lot of dirty linen, party dirty linen, being washed in public. President Klaus described the trial as an absurd reality show that was destructive to the political system in the Czech Republic, and we've heard a similar statement from the Prime Minister. They're obviously worried that this will influence how the public perceives Czech politics as such. What can you say about that?
That was the president's take on it, and the Prime Minister, Petr Nečas, was inclined towards the same position when he commented on the trial this week, saying that looking into the bowels of a political party is never a pretty sight and can do nothing good for the political situation. While there hasn't been a lot of previously unheard information in the court, the whole affair has focused a great many shady political practices onto one stage. The unbridled use of secret recording of meetings, for example, has been stunning. After hearing the secret recording of Krisztina Kocsi seemingly admitting to participation in a coup and Mr. Škarka's unveiling of a new recording, at least two more secret recordings were admitted on Friday, and the courtroom actually burst out laughing when one of the witnesses backed up his testimony by saying that he had it all on tape. Also, a lot of the testimony has revolved around hearsay, actually leading the judge at one point to say that no one from public affairs actually remembers anything. But the judge himself was baffled by the president's complaint, saying that he didn't understand whether Mr. Klaus objected to the trial itself or to the fact that it was open to the media, and added that the witnesses and defendants had been discussing the case in the media for a year already, and therefore there was no point in closing the courtroom.
One important aspect here is the connection between the Public Affairs Party and the detective agency ABL, founded by Vít Bárta.
And ABL is not on trial, but it's come up several times over the last week, and Mr. Bárta has always denied any connection between ABL and public affairs, and that statement has been hard to maintain over the last week. A number of the witnesses have been detectives from the company who handled various tasks for Mr. Bárta or for the party, admitting following politicians at their behest. And on Friday, Mr. Bárta himself seemed to imply that an acting detective of ABL worked closely with the party. And that may be one of two things that will probably be cemented in public opinion, regardless of the outcome of the trial, that the junior coalition party is inexorably linked to the detective agency ABL, even by Mr. Barta's admission. The other fact is that Mr. Barta has an inherently flimsy defense whereby he admits to having given money but says they were loans and has no written evidence of them. Even if the court finds this to be the case, legally for public figures to give such large sums of money to other politicians in envelopes is at the very least a violation of money laundering legislation. That may only be a misdemeanor offense legally, but the public, which is fed up with corruption scandals already, is unlikely to see it that way. In any case, the trial will continue in April after the court has examined the new evidence, and a verdict may be reached at that time.
Thank you very much, Christian Falvey, there. And of course, we shall be following the course of the trial closely and bringing you more information on it. Christian stays with me now for our weekly summary of the business news on Radio Prague.
Newly released figures from the Czech Statistics Office show that in 2011 the Czech economy grew by 1.7% year on year. The data also shows that fourth quarter growth for 2011 was a mere 0.6% year on year and fell by 0.1% against the previous quarter. Initial estimates for February GDP growth were a relatively anemic 0.5%. Technically, the data suggests that the Czech Republic is now in a recession with two successive quarterly falls in GDP growth. According to Raiffeisen Bank analyst Václav Franče, cited by the Czech press agency, Franče also predicts that 2012 will see an overall 0.2% fall in Czech GDP. The first two quarters of 2012 are expected to be the toughest, with improvements in the Czech economy not forecast by analysts until the end of the year. Meanwhile, data from the Czech Statistics Office also showed inflation up to 3.7% year-on-year against January's 3.5%. Rises in food produce prices, specifically vegetables and eggs, are believed to be the most significant factors behind this latest rise in inflation levels.
Czech women earn an average of 24% less than their male counterparts, according to a study undertaken by Platy CZ. While the average monthly pay for men is just under 28,000 crowns, for women the figure is just over 21,000. Differences between the professions undertaken by Czech men and women play a factor in this disparity. But if this is factored in, Czech men still earn 10% more than women for doing the same job. The greatest gender pay gap is in operational management positions, where men earn an average of 29% more than their female counterparts. Age factors also play a role, with a 16% gender pay gap in the 17 to 24 age category. The 35 to 44 age group show the greatest gap of 21%.
287 companies declared bankruptcy in February, according to the company Czech Credit Bureau, the largest number since the start of 2008, when new bankruptcy laws came into effect. Conversely, declared personal bankruptcies were down by 7% year-on-year, with 1,217 people making bankruptcy declarations. According to CCB, applications for both forms of bankruptcy were even higher than declared bankruptcies, suggesting that even more companies are expected to go under in the ensuing months. In February, 657 bankruptcy filings by companies were made, up 59% year-on-year. The greatest levels of these filings were in the Moravian Silesian district with 63 cases and in Prague with 47 cases. Applications for personal bankruptcy in February were up 17% from the previous month and up 77% year-on-year.
Czech computer sales are expected to jump by 16% this year, according to the technology research company Gartner. The company predicts that 1.3 million computers will be sold in the Czech Republic in 2012, with sales representing 14.4 billion crowns, up from 12.9 billion in 2011. They also predict that the average price of a computer will fall by 440 crowns to just over 11,000 crowns by 2015. Average prices are expected to fall to just over 10,000 crowns. Gartner also expects global demand for computers to grow by more than 4% in 2012, with a total of 368 million units. A growth in the market for tablets and smartphones is reportedly partly responsible for the surge in demand.
Increased efforts by the authorities to clamp down on the grey market in employment have yielded results, according to reports. A new law came into effect in January designed to expose employers who are using shady practices to bypass social security, health payments, and other tax obligations. Czech authorities now have double the number of inspectors, 660 people, to carry out spot checks and issue fines. According to the State Labour Inspectorate, 1,700 checks have taken place since the start of the year, with three fines issued so far, totaling 870,000 crowns. Others, they say, are forthcoming, with 120 companies apparently implicated in shady employment practices. According to the inspectorate, breaches in the law have been found at around 70% of companies checked.
That was the business news, and if you want to check out some of those figures at your leisure, you'll find the business news on our website at radio.cz. We move on now, and it's time for our main feature, a fresh edition of The Arts, in which Jan Wellinger reports on a new film by director Bohdan Slama.
Bohdan Slama, born in 1967, has long been described as one of the most important up-and-coming directors in the Czech Republic. The filmmaker received earlier recognition and acclaim for work like Wild Bees and Something Like Happiness, and has become known for naturalistic social dramas with elements of comedy, a trademark he upholds in his latest movie, Čtyři slunce, Four Suns, which had its U.S. premiere earlier this year at Sundance and its European premiere in Rotterdam. On Thursday, after much anticipation, Four Sons opened at home in Czech cinemas.
Co ty děláš? Už nejsi v práci?
No, jsem výpověď. Už mám ty pakávy dost.
Jsem ve škole, půjde všechno.
The film tells the story of several individuals, country losers as one critic describes them, largely ordinary people in a small town struggling with problems of everyday life. The main couple in the picture are Jara and Jana, played by Jaroslav Plesl and Anna Geislerová, who struggle to make ends meet, run into major difficulties raising their troubled son who is in puberty, and face difficulties keeping the old flame alive. The story is told in a naturalistic manner viewers have come to expect from Slama, and it is largely unromantic. But although he shows his characters in all their failings, it doesn't mean that as a director Bohdan Slama doesn't care about them. I spoke with the director ahead of the film's premiere.
Always I feel that shooting is just trying to find the truth of situation of our life, you know, how we are able to feel situations in between people and relations. We are trying to find in each scene truth, emotional truth of this scene. So we had to come to extreme situation, extreme moments, and try to be truly as much as possible. Not just to show something, but feel it, express it. And that's the way how we try to tell the story.
For an analogy, one might find similar characters or bleakness in the films of Mike Leigh, which also combine humor with darker elements, tragicomedy or comic tragedy. Slama is considerably gentler in his approach, but that said, it's not like Four Sons is bursting with optimism. Jara is fired from his job for smoking pot. Jana gets into a dead-end affair with her son's teacher. Jerry, a younger family acquaintance played brilliantly by Jiří Mádl, slowly flushes his life down the toilet in drugs and punk music. And then there is Karel. Karel deserves a special mention as a character who at times appears lost in the story and at other times crucial. A new-age shaman of sorts in a ratty sweater and old glasses, he appears the most ill-equipped to function in the real world. It is the film's most consistent mystery that no one knows whether he is in control or completely off the rails. The character is played by Czech actor Karel Roden, who told me this.
On se může zdát jako velký podivín pro některých lidí, že on to jakoby nedokáže.
He may strike some people as being a real weirdo or very strange because he can't explain the things that he does. He only feels that he has to do something and acts accordingly.
And director Bohdan Slama agrees.
The whole movie, we are looking to him like a such kind of loser, you know, which he should look like. I really have this idea that Karel could turn it, you know, turn it, really turn it.
Despite moments of brilliance in Four Sons, a number of Czech reviewers and reviews have been less than charitable, chiding the filmmaker for making a darker movie where the comedy is less effective. It's a matter of opinion. Certainly the film is not without some rougher patches. Slower pacing in the middle, for example, driving the plot to such a standstill, you'll wonder whether or not it may just end unexpectedly, without any resolution at all. But Slama is too clever a director not to work things through. The third act peaks with an unexpected tragedy which throws all of the earlier story into high relief. All of the arguments, earlier disappointments, difficulties of marital and material and small-town life suddenly pale. Infidelities are forgotten, clashes with the son who has followed the downward path of rebellion included. Suddenly, the earlier emotional quagmire is no longer quite as hopeless.
Ciao. Co ty tady, ty vole?
Dobrý den, co potřebujete?
Chtěl pracovat.
Chtěl byste pracovat. Ukončil jste teďko někde nějaké zaměstnání, nebo jste ukončil studium?
Then there are the performances. Rodin, one of the country's best-known actors who non-Czech viewers may recall as the undefeatable Rasputin in Hellboy, or as a chilling killer in 15 Minutes, is almost unrecognizable as the New Age Karel, whose life seemingly revolves around collecting ordinary or perhaps magical rocks. 15-year-old Marek Šacha, meanwhile, does a remarkable job of playing Yara and Yana's son, all the more because he is, or was, a non-actor. Yet his performance as a teen slipping into delinquency is flawless. The film's producer, Pavel Strnad.
Well, Marek Šacha, we found him, he's non-actor. We found him in a small town, Písek. He's just a regular student and no acting experience. And Bohdan wanted for this part somebody that could be just natural and who would have good chemistry with the actors. And Marek was a perfect choice. I was surprised by his performance when I saw his rehearsals. And this is something that Bohdan is doing quite often. He would have one or two characters played by non-actors, and he believes that gives the actors on the set something that they have to, you know, they have to react and they have to, you know, work with the people that are not acting, actually. He's 15, he had no acting experience, you know, it's a great job he's done.
Anna Geislerova also deserves mention for her turn as the frustrated Yana. She burns bright in many parts of the film, but is never more stunning than when the family is touched by disaster. Here's how Anna Geislerova described the situation faced by her character.
I think that sort of, you know, crisis and problems, you know, it's like 90% people have, you know, and you know what it's about, and he knows, and he knows, and she knows, because, you know, somehow you just get to it in some point. I don't believe that, you know, somebody exists who doesn't, you know, ever had any crisis in the relationship, in the family, with the children, and with his own, you know, vision of future. So I think she was tired of her life, and well, I also know what it means to be tired and not to be really satisfied. And so, in fact, it was difficult to create persons so everybody could understand her, but it was easy because I knew how to feel her.
Like the story, making of Four Sons was clearly intense, but working with Bohdan Slama is also said to be an unforgettable experience, on small sets in real locations in towns not unlike Slama's own. Anna Geislerova says this.
And they are very close to where Bohdan lives. That's also very, you know, significant for him because he doesn't want to travel a lot and because he has his children around and his house. And so after shooting, we all went to his house, you know, to drink. And so it was nice. I love to shoot out of Prague because everybody's more concentrated. You don't go home, you don't go to the, you know, theater, or you don't go shopping. You just go to your room or hotel or to Bohdan's house, and then you just, you are still, you know, all the time you are involved with the movie.
As for some of the claims that there are not enough humorous moments in Four Sons, well, the actress disagrees.
Well, I'm surprised that people don't feel it sometimes as a funny movie. It's a hard one. It's not, you know, easy film, but I say always it's like in life, you know, when you're dying, I I imagine, I don't know. So you remember, like, you know, 10, 20, you know, greatest moments of your life, and the rest of it you forget. So I think this film has so much humor in it as life itself, you know. You don't laugh every day, like, really breaking down from laughing. So I think it's very, you know, it's just enough of the humor.
Four Sons is in cinemas now. If you're a fan of Slama's earlier work to a degree, you already know a little bit of what to expect. In this film, he returns to familiar ground, but also takes new risks.
Stop. Teď ses napojil, veď?
That edition of The Arts was prepared and presented by Jan Wellinger, and we wind up today's half hour from Prague with another part in Pavla Horáková's popular language series ABC of Czech, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning.
Hello and welcome again to the Czech Farm. And what kind of farm would it be without cows, bulls, heifers, oxen and calves? All those animals were so important to our ancestors that they coined many phrases using those words. However, we must admit that a lot of them don't seem to be very flattering for the animals. With the exception of the bull, which is the symbol of both a strong body and will, the rest of the family have a reputation for not being very bright, and their names have an abusive meaning when applied to human beings. Cow,
kráva,
is the mature female of domestic cattle. The male, bull, is called
bík.
The young, a calf, is
tele.
The castrated male, ox, is
vůl.
And a female that has not had a calf yet, a heifer, is called
jalovice
or
jalová kráva.
And we'll start off with an idiom about a heifer and a calf. If Czechs say about someone that he is able to talk a calf out of a heifer,
vymámit z jalové krávy tele,
they mean the person is so persuasive and persistent that he can achieve the impossible, such as
vymámit z jalové krávy tele.
The calf seems to be the most popular animal as far as Czech cattle idioms are concerned. To describe someone's not particularly bright facial expression, the Czech language uses a saying,
dívá se jako tele na nová vrata.
He's staring like a calf at a new door. You can just imagine the expression of bewilderment and surprise on a calf's face.
Dívá se jako tele na nová vrata.
Confusion and disorientation is in the heart of another calf phrase.
Telecí léta.
Translated as the calf years, means puberty, the awkward age. Simply,
telecí léta.
The last calf idiom is common to all cultures that draw on the heritage of the Bible. It is to worship the golden calf.
Klanět se zlatému teleti.
Literally, to bow down to the golden calf.
Klanět se zlatému teleti.
There is another phrase used worldwide that puts together cattle and religion. It is the sacred cow.
Posvátná kráva.
A person or thing regarded as sacrosanct and immune from violation or criticism.
Posvátná kráva.
The expression refers to the Hindus' attitude to cows, which is not worship, but respect. And that's the end of today's show. I hope you'll join us next time and meanwhile find a little time to ruminate on the similarities and differences between idioms in Czech and your own language. Until then,
naschledanou.
That was Pavla Horáková with ABC of Czech, and I'm afraid it brings us to the end of today's program from Prague. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.